But I don't think people take seriously enough the idea that, like, it's not just like having more humans or something. Because of the, like, because of the nature of AIs, they have advantages, especially that have nothing to do with their IQ, but their ability to coordinate with each other. And specifically the fact that you can, you know, scale them, you can copy them. I mean, copying is the biggest one. You can merge them, you can distill them, and you can, like, select and evolve over groups of, you know, teams of them.
The inherent limitation of the moment is that people are economically incentivized to not build AI into their products. You know, ChatGPT set the price of all AI products at $20, and it's really hard to do all this cool stuff at $20 price point. Rakesh, I'm super excited about this. I think you put out a video recently, and this was like not one of your normal interview type videos where you're sort of talking about, it was almost like a semi-recruitment video, you sort of, I think, telling people what you're excited to spend your time working on. Do you want to sort of just, I think it was a helpful video for me to just sort of get a sense of your worldview of like where you're building this thing, which is now your podcast, or like, I don't even know how you describe it to people externally. But I think the like essence that I took away was like, there's this really incredible AI moment that's happening, and there's not enough people who actually have a grasp of what's happening. And I think this is a huge problem for the world. And I'm curious to get your sort of framing of this.
Yeah. And it was in the context of recruiting, but I do believe it, which is that, look, if you remember when COVID happened, there was like, there was a point in like March, April, whatever, when people were like, okay, this is the main thing that's happening in the world. And if you talk to the president, if you talk to the CEO of some company, if you talk to the a CNN reporter or whatever, it's just like, COVID is the main thing we are dealing with as a world. But if you go back a month or something in February, it's like one of 20 things that are on your radar, right? Maybe especially in January. And I feel like we're in this sort of transition moment in AI where I think if it goes the way in which I think it will go, and maybe you as well, that like, look, it'll become pretty obvious that this is like the main thing that's happening in the world. Right now, we're not there yet. And so what I try to do on the podcast is, especially more and more so, is not only cover AI from the, like, you know, like, look, if we had really good information about COVID and had like really thoughtful analysis of it, we could have avoided a lot of mistakes, made a lot of what ended up being good decisions even earlier and so forth. But also, like, I think in the AI field, it does get coverage in the sense of like people will get on Twitter and tell you about like what's different between O3 and Grok 3 and so forth, this very like week to week, month to month kind of update and who's ahead in the benchmarks. But just like, come on, guys, let's step back just a second. Like, what's going on here? And, you know, when you zoom out like 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, and not just from just like, you know, like let's smoke a doobie and like talk, you know, about AGI or something, but like, you know, what are the best models we have from like economics and all these other fields, which lend us some insight into how to think about what a world would look like when you have billions of extra people, many of them smarter than humans, and like try to think rigorously about what's going to happen in the world not that far from now.
Yeah, and how much how much do you think about like the actual medium of how you do this? Like, is it like you're like bought and sold that like, you know, long form video conversation, audio conversation is like the mechanism by which you can like most efficiently do it? Or like what, like, have you thought about like other ways of sort of same mission, same way of delivering on that, but just like not a podcast or not videos or something like that?
Yeah, I think, I do want to do more blog posts because there are a lot of topics where I haven't found somebody who's like the clear, obvious best guest. And I think it's just a matter of like, somebody's got to think about this and write it up and do the research, in particular on like things involving China and also on what does the end game for AI look like and how that should inform our sort of views on, I'm a sort of libertarian. I believe we should like try to give things, people, AIs, whatever, as much freedom as we can, given the constraints of what's practical. And if you believe in an intelligence explosion, is there a way in which you can still keep classical liberalism within that. So anyways, those are the kinds of topics I want to do more blog posts about. But I do think that people really underrate, in general, people really underrate video and podcasts in general, but especially video as a medium of delivering messages to people. If I just think about how I spend my free time, so much of it is spent on YouTube, if I'm just being honest, right? And like the world is big, right? And just like staying on Twitter or on the five blogs you read, rather than just like reaching the millions of people who are out there. So I'm still doubling down on video, but also more blog posts.
Yeah. And one other quick follow-up on this is like, how much do you worry about, like, I think the my assessment, and you can tell me this is right or wrong, but like my assessment is like the people who are sort of paying closest attention to the AI moment are like people who are like sort of either well situated to benefit from it or like just like already kind of in that ecosystem. And I think actually like the folks who are going to be disproportionately perhaps impacted by what's going to happen are like the people who don't have this visibility. And I think I'm curious how you think about like how like the audience that you're reaching and like how much that has an impact on like these different mediums. Cause it's something that Nolan and I have actually talked about, and we're at a much smaller scale than I think your visibility is at, but it's like, how much do we actually want to like go down the rabbit hole really deeply versus like just try to get the sort of general themes to the widest number of people. And it's this weird trade-off because it's hard to, it seems like you can't do really great content around both in some cases, or maybe you can, but.
I would actually disagree with that. I mean, like, I wouldn't even use like myself as a reference point. I think like there may be a different example here is like 3 Lou 1 Brown. If you like watches like math stuff, it's like, I mean, like literally his like Transformer series or Andre Karpathy, it's like way more technical and detailed than any podcast episode I've done. Like I'm not going through and showing you the exact formula for attention or something, but it's like way more popular too. I'd be curious about your experience. Have you noticed in the episodes you do that are more technical, they get less views or something? Because in my experience, like, at least in terms of, yeah, I mean, I would say, like, I was surprised, for example, with your former colleague, Sholto, and another AI researcher, Trenton, who are my good friends. We did an episode together. And for that, you know, I, like, around that time, I had also interviewed other, like, AI lab CEOs and so forth. And that video, which was much more technical, and that podcast performed better than like, you know, interviewing the labs of AI CEOs and so forth. I'm curious about your experience here though.
No, I think this is a good example of like, you're just better at this. Like, I think maybe I think this is true at the sort of potential outcome level. I think there's a better method perhaps than what we're doing, but I think that's actually the Andre Karpathy and Grant Sanderson examples are really actually the best examples of this, honestly. I think like they have made this really, but like, I think the challenge is, it's hard to find those. There's not a lot of like, and I've actually thought about this a lot for 3 Blue 1 Brown and Grant Sanderson. And we did some stuff together when he was working on the Julia programming computational thinking course at MIT, and was just reflecting on like, why are there not more people doing? And I think it's just like so hard to be the person. Yes. And like, it's tough. Like, we need more of those people.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a skill he has. And also like, he does it all himself. Like, he's not like outsourced any, like he like wrote the library and then like codes up all the animations himself and everything. It's quite impressive.
I guess as someone who is obviously creative and building, and you talk about blogs and writing articles, you know, as AI generated content becomes more indistinguishable than human content, as far as human outputs, like, you know, what is the needle as far as moving with authenticity? Like, will that still matter? Like, how do you, I'm just curious to your thoughts as someone who's building, because Logan and I have talked about, you know, hey, let's get these AI reports up and running, get them out to the audience. Logan's like, no, make it organic. It's got to come from us. So curious as someone, from someone like you, how you view that.
I think as a matter of, if I just want to learn, like in a matter of a year or two, and you're on the inside, so you would have even better estimates than me, obviously. But I would expect, like, if I want to learn about a topic, I'm not, if it's just like pure information, I'm like, I'm already at a point where I wouldn't hire like either a research assistant or a tutor or something in many topics. I would just like, chatting to Claude is way more useful. And by the way, that is Gemini or any other LLM. By the way, that is an interesting thought about like how much were you willing to pay for tutors to teach you about whatever discipline. You know, usually high tens to hundreds of dollars and the $20 a month, and you can just like learn, you know, you get, I mean, like, it's, I would prefer talking to it than to most tutors separately. But yeah, so then in terms of, so in terms of like teaching people stuff, yeah, they're going to win. Then there's a matter of like driving saliency towards something where I'm like, I don't know, if I'd interview, just like this week I interviewed Satya Nadella, and like, I don't think people are watching that because like he is like the best explainer in the world about topological qubits, but it's like, this is like the, you know, this is like, he is the person to like convey his thoughts on it, or to package all his like entire worldview together and like apply it to this particular breakthrough or something. So I think it'll probably become more of a matter of like, but then again, why can't the AI is just emulate a person of the particular kind of viewpoint? I don't know. I mean, maybe I get automated. I don't know if I have a good, I don't know if I have a good answer. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's interesting too, because I mean, I think there's an argument to be made, and Logan and I've talked about this as well. Like, what if we could just, you know, make this extra layer on a large language model that's trained on all your stuff. So again, it's kind of reflecting your thoughts, your ideas, your writing patterns, your writing, you know, yeah, context, whatever the case is. So maybe that gets back, kicked back to you. Does it truly reflect you? I don't know. That's why I was curious to kind of get your thoughts. Logan, what are you thinking over there?
Yeah, I think this is like and Dvorkach, I think the best example of this is like, especially with research stuff, and like as you go down the rabbit hole, I think the challenge, and it's maybe the same situation when you like hear your own voice, which is like, maybe the outcome will be like, even if the thing's trained in all your stuff, you like look at it and you're like, I wasn't the one who formed those thoughts, and thus like, yeah, this thing's not actually representing like who I am, and therefore like I'm always going to go and make my own content personally myself, because like I don't want, this thing still seems foreign even though it's supposedly some approximation of who I am.
I wonder if we'll feel this way about like the relationship, you know, sometimes you'll like write a blog post, you'll write something, and then like you'll forget about it, and you'll look back on it a month later, and there will be this sort of feeling of familiarity but also encountering it for the first time. And I feel like it'll be like that, where sometimes I'm like, who wrote this shit, right? And then sometimes I'm like, oh, this is like good, like that's actually a really interesting idea. I don't know why I, you know, like lost my I didn't follow up on that, but I wonder if it'll feel like that.
Speaking of writing, we can now kind of chime in on your article for folks who haven't read it yet. It's called What Fully Automated Firms Will Look Like. I want to double click on that. It kind of sounds like a sci-fi movie. I was reading it. Very interesting around your concept and the idea around having basically these models with other models all streamlining the process of human workflow. So yeah, just curious to hear more on.
Yeah, I mean, the basic idea I was going for there is, usually when you think about how the world will change with AIs, it's very common to think in just terms of, look, it'll be like, I have a smart personal assistant and I'll be like 2x more productive or something. But I don't think people take seriously enough the idea that like, it's not just like having more humans or something. Because of the nature of AIs, they have advantages, especially that have nothing to do with their IQ, but their ability to coordinate with each other. And specifically the fact that you can, you know, scale them, you can copy them. I mean, copying is the biggest one. You can merge them, you can distill them, and you can like select and evolve over groups of, you know, teams of them or groups of them. Just the idea that like, look, how much higher would Google's market cap be if you could like make arbitrary copies of Jeff Dean or Sundar Pichai or something? And then how about like the fact that it's like the company obviously is so big, so it has to be distributed, and there's so much that's lost in that, lost in translation or inefficiencies and so forth. And what if every single layer of the bureaucracy was just like, you don't need that, because like Sundar is like, now you're spending like $1 billion on inference on Sundar, and like he can literally write every press release, he can like view every pull request, he can craft every strategy doc, and like whoever's the best person to do it, I mean, like if like Jeff Dean should be like doing $1 billion worth of inference, then he's the one who's doing it. And you can amortize the cost of all the training, like, you know, you want to know how the data centers work, and you want to know how like how to code for like a certain kind of thing really well, you want to understand business case studies really well, since you can just like copy, make copies arbitrarily easily, then you can just like amortize the cost of like getting PhDs in every single field, and then like for a few cents just get another copy of that. And I mean, you can keep going down this list of advantages, but like just basically you just have like humongous population sizes and this ability to communicate really efficiently. And like, if you think about what makes humans special from other animals, it's this ability to accumulate cultural knowledge, which does get messed up in these sorts of like, it's like hard to accumulate, you know, like just like a lot gets lost in translation. We have big bureaucracies and so forth. And the potential here is that like that just, you know, it's like it'll be the difference between like prokaryotes and eukaryotes in terms of the level of complexity you can accumulate.
This is an interesting thread to pull on. Nolan and I were talking to the CEO of StackBlitz, Bolt.new, which is one of those applications where you can sort of put in text and get an application that just like kind of works right out of the box. And the thread of that conversation was around like how, yes, you can do that, but like actually at the end of the day, it's like it is how you bring that thing to the world like matters a lot. And I guess in like the context of like, you know, using the Google example is kind of like easy to get around this because Google has distribution and all this other stuff. But if you think about like the fully autonomous like company that is like starting from scratch today, where like they actually, there's like all of this, like you need to go get human attention in order to like sell something or get someone to do something. Like, how do you think like how, like, yes, the whole system can run itself, but do you think, yeah, how do you think about it going and like doing the like actually interacting with the world piece of it?
I mean, you're closer to the ground on this than me, but like, aren't there companies working on this? And sorry, to be clear, the idea here is like, this is not like I'm saying this is going to happen next year. This is more like, look, once we have AGI, I'm just saying this is not going to be like, oh, everybody's 2x more productive. I'm saying like, this is like, this is another way to think about why it's so cyberpunk and like completely different. It's like, it's not just having more people or something. And it, like, this doesn't assume superhuman intelligence. This doesn't like, I'm not saying that they're like 250 IQ or something. Like, literally if they're like humans, but if humans like minds could like merge and if like, you could like arbitrarily copy them and so forth, this is what could happen. And then in over the long run, I mean like robotics and like, you know, like, I'm sure like the AIs will have CRMs to talk to other AIs and so forth. Like, you know, in the long run, that I think that will happen.
Yeah, just while you made the AGI comment, I think it feels like the discussion has shifted so much in the last, or at least my take on like the overall discussion of AGI has shifted so much in the last 6 months even. Do you have a sense of like what your, you know, if you got insert your favorite lab CEO on the show and they're like, we have AGI, Dwarkesh, and we want to show it to you. Like, what would be the thing that you're actually looking for as like evidence, or like, what are the questions you're asking to be like, to probe that that's actually true in some case?
I think I would be less interested in like the specific questions, because I'm like, from like just a text interface, I'm like, they're basically AGI. I think I'm more curious about like, remote work kinds of things of like, can you just go do a task for me? So I would count AGI as like, if you can do anything any remote worker can do, or like less than 90% of anything that any remote. So like, obviously we've got like super smart humans who can do like very specialized things. But like, if I could like hop on a computer and do something, this like model can do it. I'm like, I'd be especially keen to see that. Just like give it a VM and like, can it do what I would do?
Another interesting question. I know that you kind of formed the podcast, and I was doing research on the podcast. It was, you know, started almost 4 years ago in your dorm during COVID. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was almost like 2 years in, there was a thought or an idea of potentially shutting down the podcast. And then maybe a listener or someone was able to grant you some funds to give you some leeway to really kick things up. And all to say, you know, it was a phenomenal decision on that individual's part, because now you're absolutely crushing it. But I think on that, you know, you've mentioned that one of your goals with the podcast is to develop original insights and gain deeper understandings of various topics. So can you share some key insights you formed from your conversations and how they actually shape some of your thinking now?
And my yeah, sort of parallel question to this is like, have you had any of these conversations where you're like, it sort of changed? Like, I see some of the conversations you're having, and it's like obviously some of the most impactful people. Have you walked away from any of those being like, actually my worldview was just like dramatically updated after this? Yeah. 2 hour conversation.
I think the biggest example of that was the conversation with Carl Schulman, which is, I think at this point over like 2 years ago or something. But he's this person who is like incredibly smart, behind a decade or so ago, came up with many of the ideas like we now talk about as like are part of the lingo is like kind of comes from him. The idea of like explosive growth, you know, like maybe if you just like plug in our economic models and you have extra people, then you, and like the more people leads to more compute, which leads to more people and so forth, the least explosive growth. The idea of a potential software only singularity. But the thing I especially picked up from the conversation, which was quite, I mean, there were so many things, but one was this analogy to scaling in humans and from like primates to humans, like why are humans so smart? And it's there's research which suggests that it's because if you look at how many more neurons other kinds of animals get, if you like increase their weight by a gram, they increase the weight of their brain by a gram, how many more neurons do you get? It doesn't really scale that well. Whereas for human, like, you know, they won't get a, like a linear increase in the amount of neurons. Whereas for primates, there is like really good scaling of like brain mass to number of neurons. And the theory there is there's like a more scalable architecture that was figured out with primates. And then you could just like, follow this and other things about our environment at the time rewarded marginal increases in intelligence, and this lends credence to the scaling hypothesis for why these AIs would become by default like generally intelligent as a result of more compute. That I found super, and there were so many other things like that, and I can just like keep going down the list, but yeah, I would say Carl Schulman was like the episode where I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, I love that. Do you think like from that narrative and what you've seen today, like if you had to hypothesize like why that sort of explosive growth takeoff doesn't happen specifically enabled by AI, like do you have any like thoughts as to like what would be the thing that stops that from happening? Is it like government regulation or like what? And yeah, what are the
I think it would just be like models don't, you know, like we have these models based on 200 years of human history or something, and people have tried to extrapolate it back to a million years ago or 10,000 years ago or something. And you can buy that if you want. But the idea that like you're just extrapolating this to like this totally different thing, and we like maybe it just doesn't apply for, there's many different reasons why it couldn't apply. One is maybe you're like really bottlenecked by your top people and not just like general population size. And in human groups, population size is just a proxy for like how many top people you have, rather like, you know, if like Switzerland has like a couple million people and then America has 300 million people, America's just gonna have more geniuses, and that's what really matters. It's not like the 300 million. And so with AI, since they're all the same, you need them to all be geniuses. Like you need, you know, you can't just like have like 300 million a normal. And there's so many other things that could be wrong with this argument. Another one other that Tyler Cowen explained when he was arguing against this view on my podcast is that there's like, looks like sub-Saharan Africa has a lot of people. And they don't have like explosive growth. And like something's wrong there. It's not clear how you fix it or how intelligence would solve whatever is going on. Similar to like many other problems in the world, there's like some other bottleneck.
I guess interesting to get your thought on this too, as someone who's talking to all these builders and you know, prominent people in this space, you know, are there any, because you're always hearing like what's next, kind of really pushing the limits. You know, are there, after any of your podcasts or any of your calls, do you ever sit back and kind of reflect and be like, oh crap, we're moving too quick? Like here's an issue with AI that's actually not being talked about as much as it should. And here's kind of the ripple effect that it would play.
Certainly using AI for further AI research, because I think that could plausibly lead to an intelligence explosion. Not in sort of like this comical, like they're like writing the code from like writing like the for loops for like AGI or something, but just in the sense of, it seems like the more really good AI researchers you have, the more progress you can make. And if you make these things smart enough to where like smarter AIs are helping you find these like little algorithmic compute multipliers, which help you make like increase the population of AI researchers, and you repeat that loop, maybe you get superhuman intelligence on the other end and like a, you know, very rapid software only singularity. Maybe that's like the biggest question. And like, if I was like sort of hassling the lab leaders or somebody, I would just be like, yo, how carefully are you thinking about this critical threshold? And when I had Jeff Dean and Noam Shazir on the podcast, I think I was just like, wait, you're just saying, like, they were just like, yeah, this is what's going to happen. Like the intelligence explosion, because of like these automated AI researchers. And I'm like, isn't that crazy? Like, what are you, what's your plan for that and so forth? So, yeah, that maybe that's the under discussed thing.
Yeah. Did you see the co-scientist stuff that we put out yesterday? I don't know if you had a chance to look through any of it.
No, not yet, but, I've been meaning to get into it. Tell me more about it. How does it work?
Yeah, I think this is like this system is not, this is like truly a system built on top of Gemini. It's not like it's not like a different version of the model. But I think like I chatted with that team this morning, was just like a good example of how the model is able to like generate a bunch of novel hypotheses potentially about different like combinations between drugs and outcomes or like medical conditions, like all these different scientific domains. And then it actually just like goes through existing research literature and like kind of does what you would imagine as like tree search of, you know, what are the different combinations of different things and like connecting different scientific data between. So it's like, it is taking what we have and trying to find novel was my loose approximation, like less so than like it's truly trying to like invent something new, or like I think there is an angle to that as well. And then it's like, given obviously that it doesn't have the ability to test whether or not any of these things are true, so it is hypotheses that are like backed by scientific data, and then you would sort of hand that off to a researcher to be like, okay, here's your research agenda, now like go validate whether or not this thing is true. It feels like that's going to be hard to do. And I think that like the thing that makes me nervous about the automated research perspective is like, actually, if you do get enough compute, doing this for LLMs is like, or like AI models is actually pretty easy to do, because like you have like a bunch of like distinct evals versus like, I feel like on the science side, it's like actually a little bit harder, because you have to like prove these like novel hypotheses, which like you'd need to do like a clinical trial with Pfizer, and it's going to cost $150 million or something. Right. It's like really hard to make that happen and like validate that.
Can I ask you a couple of questions about this actually? So you guys were the first ones to do deep research too, right? And this was another similar sort of like scaffold. Is it just like a thing? Did it involve any fine tuning at all? Or was it just like a thing anybody could have done and you're just like nobody else bothered to do it? Like it was just like fundamentally it's like a matter. So, I mean, I don't know if this is true, but I've like heard similar things about ChatGPT itself and so forth.
Kind of true. You should talk to Fraser Kelton. I apologize, Fraser, if I'm butchering your last name, who is the head of product for OpenAI when ChatGPT was released. And like, this is part, like, it was the model that went into ChatGPT originally was not the model that was publicly, like, it did have additional, like, instruction tuning for the, like, the chat style. So, like, it wasn't the off the shelf model that was available in the API. So, like, but you could almost do ChatGPT.
Yeah. So, what's your theory on why? I mean, like, I feel like you can't throw a stone in San Francisco and not hit somebody building an LLM wrapper. But maybe many of the most successful ones have like come from the labs themselves. It's like Notebook LLM or Deep Research or so forth. What's your take on like all these people are trying to start LLM startups or LLM wrappers, and then like the labs are the only ones succeeding at making them, even though not the only ones, but like they have really good ability to succeed here, despite the fact that like. Everybody's, you know, I don't know, like fundamentally it shouldn't be the same thing, right? So what do you think is going on there?
Yeah, I think there's two levels to this. One, I think the proximity to the research and like the magic like kind of inspire. And like, I think you feel that, like I'm sure you can ask folks at OpenAI and like you just kind of feel like you're close to the magic and like the ideas are like flowing at a different level than I think like a lot of other places are. But also I think like you kind of have the agency to think about this from the perspective of like, we do actually control the model, and like, could we like, do we need to like, you know, maybe we don't need to make the model worse, but I think like people kind of have the freedom to imagine like, what would we do if we could, you know, control the whole end of the spectrum. And I think when you're outside of the somewhere that actually makes a language model or any type of AI model, I think you kind of start to think about like, oh, well, what is the technology that others are giving to me? And like, you're kind of stuck in that framework. And I think that framework is actually in many ways like limiting the mindset of what the order of magnitude of what people try to solve versus like, you know, we have full control all the way down to the TPU. We can do anything. Like, what is actually the most impactful problem to solve? And I think that's like my essence of the co-scientist angle is like, this is actually a really important problem to solve. And like, somebody should take a shot at it. And like, maybe this won't work, but we have everything we need to potentially make it successful.
Yeah. Let's get another question. I lost my train of thought. On this, I wonder if like one of the things is that is it that maybe you're more comfortable spending inference compute in a way that like if you're building an LLM wrapper, you just want to make like one call or a couple of calls or something, and you're just like, it's going to be like whatever amount, like many double digit dollars worth of compute per like deep research or whatever. I'm probably not that high, but like or per like the co-scientist thing, and like maybe the labs are more comfortable doing that. I think
this is true. Like this is actually, and Nolan and I have had this conversation with like almost everyone who is, we have a lot of folks who are like building AI products. And I think this is actually the inherent limitation of the moment is that people are economically incentivized to not build AI into their products. It's like, do as minimal AI as possible, because like actually your, you know, ChatGPT set the price of all AI products at $20, and it's really hard to do all this cool stuff at $20 price point. And like, I think the positive thing is like, and this is me reframing it slightly, but like, I think the cost of AI is going down to the right. Like the cost is down 99% over the last 2 years. Consumer awareness of AI, and understanding of what AI can do is like going up and to the right. And like in parallel to that is consumer willingness to spend on AI. So like, I think people need to take, and that's why like I love the like, you know, $500 a month Devin AI software engineer, $200 a month ChatGPT, because like, I actually do think like people need to have the freedom to push the frontier. And I think it means you're going to have a more expensive product today. And like, hopefully you make that cheaper for everyone. But like, just a $20 product, like you're not going to solve the problems that the world has with that. Like it needs to be something else.
Yeah. And especially, I mean, we were just talking about this with like how much a tutor is worth, but like go across every category and like how much we're willing to pay for humans to do similar things. And it's like a weird skipping over dollars to pick up pennies kind of thing.
I think another interesting thread is we were talking to Chamath about this and kind of just AI adoption as a whole and consumers, but also just like the general public as well. And we were kind of talking about use cases and what are actual tangible use cases that get people feeling comfortable with leveraging AI or these different technologies. As someone has obviously talked to a lot of folks, I know some of which are, you know, part of the large organizations that maybe are still building, but any use cases that really stand out from some of your conversations, whether it was like, oh crap, I never thought about this, or hey, this is a use case that adopted way quicker and scaled a lot faster than maybe originally anticipated because the market was larger than what maybe
for consumers.
For consumers or products or users, you know, talking to someone who's been able to put something AI related in front of an audience and next thing you know is bid on.
Other than the obvious ones, which are like, you know, deep research and so forth, notebook LM. I guess it's weird that a lot of examples don't immediately come to mind. I would say that like I'm surprised that more people aren't using like a cursor like equivalent for writing, which the AI firms post I like wrote using like the, basically, I mean, Obsidian has a plugin that basically works like cursor but within the Markdown. Cursor itself also works on Markdown. And like that's like incredibly useful interface, especially the way I write is just like I'm like, ah, this is what I mean to say, and then just like put it into like use a whisper flow and just like and then just like hit send on that. And then another thing is I personally have been using, I have a couple of internal scripts that I have, and again this is like not really answering your question because you're asking about what other people use, but I have like a couple of scripts where, you know, I could sit down in an afternoon and it's like one I have, it fixes an auto-generated transcript by feeding it into Gemini and then just like, hey, rewrite this and here's what I like in transcripts. Like, here's how you make them more readable and whatever. And it's like, there's like no publicly available tool that results in as good a quality transcripts at the other end as like this little script with Gemini on the other, multimodal Gemini on the other end. And it's like, how valuable is text-to-speech, by the way? Speech-to-text and like the fact that like, you know, it's like 300 lines of code or something. And like, you know, people would be willing to spend like whatever Gemini Flash costs to make this happen, right? It's like somebody's not doing it. Similar for like other post-production stuff. So, but yeah, I guess I'm like not aware of what the other consumer things people are using this for.
I love the writing cursor angle. People were memeing on me the other day because I tweeted, I was like, cursor for everything, like cursor the whole stack down for writing for like customers to like literally just take that product experience and like do it. But I think it actually hits on a weird point, which is like, and can you say again, like this is literally just like a plugin built by someone else for Obsidian, or Obsidian makes this themselves?
Let me give them a shout out. I can just pull it up. Obsidian writing. LLM. Let's see.
Because I'm curious. I've looked around for a lot of these writing products, and like most of them are just like very meh.
So we can pause this, right? As in like,
We'll pause it. Take your time.
I'm just going to look it up on my computer. Just that we can give them a shout out and also, okay, I think it's called Smart Comp. So Obsidian is a product which is just like Markdown, Markdown and plus like GraphView and whatever. Anyways, I'm sure you can use Cursor itself for this and just open up a Markdown directory. And then within Obsidian, there's a plugin called Smart Composer. And that's what I've used for some of these projects. And then I literally go through paragraph by paragraph, like here's my current paragraphs, here's what I meant to say, here's how I change things, reorganize, whatever. But the same thing you do with code. Works really well.
I love that. We'll include a link in the show notes for folks who want to try it. I think I'm excited. I'm not an Obsidian user, but I'm always looking for different writing tools.
And why isn't this a feature in Gemini or like with Google Docs in Gemini?
It's a good question. We'll make it happen. Feature request. We'll talk to the teams. I think we need something like that. And honestly, like I think this is the responsibility that the companies that have the large distribution channels have. Like I think people want this type of tool. I think it's just a matter of like how do you do it in a really thoughtful way and make sure it's a great product experience. So hopefully we'll do it.
I think another interesting thing, and it kind of goes back to the use cases, and I think it goes back to the trust. You know, you have to basically get a society to trust software to some extent. You think about how you can trust firefighters, police officers, whatever the case is. Like what I'm curious to hear from your perspective as talking to these people when they think that threshold will be met as far as right now we have technology to go in and actually do something that's a tangible outcome or, again, a use case that is actually gaining trust from society, whether that's developing an actual solution to a drug that came strictly from AI. Like, I'm curious. I mean, there's obviously a lot of different examples of how it could progress and what would be first to market. But I'm curious to kind of hear from your perspective, domain wise or industry wise, like, what do you think potentially has leverage in actually creating some kind of tangible outcome to gain trust in that community around AI itself?
I correct me if I misunderstood the question, but in terms of like just like how, you know, if AI can do something, how do you actually get people to use it to do the thing? I think like them becoming smarter goes a long way of if you just like, I've noticed initial, you know, using the models a year or two ago, I would have this like very sort of like, I like use it for fun almost, or like maybe in case I'm missing something, but I'm like not really like I'm not like thinking of it as another colleague. And now I like, if I talk to an LLM, I just like genuinely, I think of it as I'm talking to a human on the other end, and I can give vague directions and it'll like kind of get solved and so forth. And over time, as it gets smarter and smarter, I think that like, maybe I'm of the opinion that by default, people will just like, they will not think of this as something that's like a separate AI system that they have to be sort of skeptical of. If anything, they'll like by default be too trusting just because it just like feels like you're having a lifetime conversation with a real human being.
Do you think the same thing will be true for the robotic space with AI? Like, will we have that same like default? Because I feel like today narrative is like default to not trusting the robots. They kind of all look a little scary. It's a little ominous.
I have no, like, I'm not sure. I think robots, maybe there's like slightly more uncanny than that. But also, I assume a lot of robotics applications just like don't need humans around that much if you're just like in a warehouse or something. I actually don't know what probably is the biggest like the industry in which like the robotics will make the most amount of money immediately or will have the highest application. What would you say that is?
I would say auto. I mean, my initial thought when we were posing that question too, it kind of goes back to Waymo. You know, it's a self-driving car. You get to think of, you know, it's only in San Francisco. You have all these people. Are you willing to jump in a car with no driver? You know, it takes a while. Then all of a sudden you start building up enough rides. All right, now you can look at how that actually compares to a normal individual driver as far as like the benchmarks and data behind it. And again, that's where I think it's interesting. Now Waymo is expanding into new cities. Like, again, I think there's interesting use cases that are going to be seen where it just takes that time, that effort, that really concentrated market adoption to then go out to the wider audience and gain that traction. You know, Tesla with self-driving cars, like it's all about gaining trust. And it's interesting to see where it'll go.
Absolutely. Waymo is a great example of that.
Yeah, and I think Waymo is actually like, I think the challenge, I think they have this like city by city, like kind of trust to build, which I think is like actually a really interesting framing of thinking about this at from like a software perspective for AI, and how like actually the mindset is very different. Like you can imagine a world where like, you know, in California and in San Francisco, future companies, like that's actually the place where people are going to build these like AI enabled firms. And like the world is going to look so different for people doing that versus like, do you want to have a AI enabled firm in your small town in Iowa, or do you have Waymo in your small town? It's like just a weird, a much different world in that context.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think this is another interesting follow-up question, because again, we're talking very futuristic, what's going to happen down the road. And everyone who's listening to this podcast, I'm sure, is going to say, you know, what's going to happen to society? How will society adapt, especially on the points of, hey, there's now these organizations that are all streamlined using AI. Like, curious to get your thought. I think obviously we're so early on where it's difficult to kind of picture that, especially how quick technology is popping up and things are changing. But, you know, where do you think humans 10, 15 years from now, you know, how their role in society will change potentially?
Like right now, like 60% of GDP is spent on labor, on wages, and that's a lot, and it's gonna like potentially go to closer to zero. Even if you think like some people will still get paid a lot of money for like nannies or whatever kind of thing, like even if GDP increases a lot, so like GDP will increase a lot, and like the relative fraction which is paid to humans will continue to decrease. Like I don't really think there's I don't see how that wouldn't happen. Like how would the fraction that humans control go up? Or humans are paid in wages. So even if you have UBI or something, the relative importance of humans in the economy will continue to decrease in terms of most of the output and is going to firms that are made up of AIs, or going to capital allocators who are themselves maybe humans but are investing in AI stuff and so forth. And then I'm like, honestly, I don't know what that will mean. I mean, people say that, democracy won't go on because like democracy relies on the fact that the only reason you're like have, you know, voting rights is because like you're economically valuable, and if like, or the general person is economically valuable, and like the government had to enfranchise them in order to get their productivity or something. And then the idea is that like, well, if they're human, the ordinary person isn't that like valuable, then democracy is gonna outcompeted by like these like AI firm / AI firm government, whatever things. That's one theory. I mean, like, I think just like a lot of the most powerful countries in the world are these like democracies. And so especially that's where the AI development is initially happening. And I think especially if you like don't just like hit soup, like pause and let some like the UAE or whatever just like completely take the lead. Then I guess, yeah, I'm just like, honestly, not sure. That's a long-winded way of saying I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen.
I guess none of us are sure. Yeah. I think it's interesting too, because I've tried to conceptualize it myself. And from the conversation we had, like, I wonder if down the road, like, you're just going to see like 100x influx of small businesses with like 1 to 5 employees. And you're going to have that kind of SMB business crushed. It'll be large enterprise organizations that have the money and can do it. And then all these tiny companies that are kind of working with these agentic systems, again, 1 to 5 people. Yeah, it will be interesting.
In a way, it'll be tiny. It could be tiny in the sense of like, well, you need humans for the certain things that like, maybe like somebody's got to go like go talk to the the department of whatever and like but like everything else can be the AIs. So in a way it'll be small and like that's term, but like it'll be a huge, like it'll be the biggest companies ever. There'll be like millions of employees and they'll all just be AIs.
Yeah, your comment about democracy reminded me that I wanted to get your take, just as someone who spent a bunch of time like somewhat outside the AI domain, but also in like, you spend a bunch of time talking to like geopolitical figures as well. I'm curious if you have a take on like whether or not we're going to see any like national AI efforts. And like actually your reaction to like the fact that we haven't seen any. Like I think actually 2 years ago, if you would have asked me like today sitting in 2025, like would we have like any frontier like government backed AI research happening, I probably would have answered yes, to be honest. It seems like very logical. And we haven't seen that, or at least like it doesn't seem like those folks are at the frontier if they're doing that work. So I'm curious like what your meta take is on that.
Yeah, there's like a question of like, will like a sort of like national project win? And there's another question of like, will it by default then be nationalized anyways, even if that's not like the most competitive thing, given like how powerful AI is. But I mean, even to your point, like, yeah, it doesn't seem like the government has like done something which suggests that they're like on the brink of nationalizing. On the other hand, as we saw in COVID, things can happen really fast, right? So you're just like going from, you're not even thinking about this to like, you're using the Defense Production Act to like make factories for masks and so forth and like warp speed and so forth. So I don't know what will happen in the end game. But it does seem in terms of like, maybe a public-private partnership could be like from purely technical perspective could maybe work. But the idea that like you could just have the whole thing like just run by the government, it just like there's not, like at least in like recent history, there's really not good examples of governments running like successful tech projects like this at maybe I'm like talking out of turn actually. Like maybe there's like a lot of other things the government does which are, yeah, I don't know. Is there something the government does which is like super high tech and like they're doing it at incredibly high competence? Possible there is, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm like, I feel like this is maybe my dark horse suggestion, but I'm like, just let NASA do it. Like, I kind of like, I know NASA has its challenges and like, it's, you know, it's expensive to build stuff and there's some perverse incentives, but I'm like, I actually do think, and this is my bias, like, I do think it'd be interesting to see, they've got enough smart people, like they have this sort of history of innovation. It's like, if you look at like the American identity is actually like, so, and like, obviously, I think the US needs this slightly less than like other large companies outside or large countries outside the US. But I feel like that seems like having a space program do this would be really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, the other question is like, why is that needed, right? Like fundamentally, like I guess like DeepSeek or there's other things that have showed that like we're not in the territory where you need to like have a like invest trillions of dollars to, you know, you're like, if you had the talent and if you had the ability to execute, like it seems like you could like do good things here. I mean, like you could make the thing that like the next LLM wrapper that like Google's going to make internally that's going to go viral, right? Like maybe you could make that. And that's not like sort of funding a bottleneck. And maybe just like a matter of like, I don't know if it's getting out of the way, but maybe that's not enough. Like maybe like need some dense concentration of like, as you were saying, just like breathing the ideas or something. But either way, not sure how the nationalized, you know, like the government partnership helps you that much.
Yeah, I think it's this hedge on like the chance that like there's no like, you know, even DeepSeek is under no obligation to continue to open. They could decide, we actually really like this stuff for ourselves. Yeah. So do you think like that's like a viable, like, and maybe like China's not a good example, but like other world governments that like want to be, want to sort of have this hedge on the concentration of power, like assuming this actually plays out in the way that everyone thinks that it does. Like if you get a call from Prime Minister of India and they're like, hey, you know, should we be doing our own national AI effort to compete with, you know, OpenAI and et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, like I have like two answers. Like in one sense, I think they are right. Like you're kind of fucked if you're like, this is going to be the main thing, right? Historically, what really matters is like population size really matters, because even if your GDP per capita is like half of another country's, if you have 4x the population, you know, it like really swamps other considerations. And so that's why bigger countries by default are just more powerful. And now if like your population, your like intellectual capital, your other like goods and services are being provided by AIs, then yeah, being at the forefront there and having leverage over the system is like quite valuable. Now, but then there's a question of like, okay, if you are like the leader of India, I mean, India maybe is like slightly easier, but if like Nigeria or something where it's like, yeah, you've got a lot of smart people, but like your institutions are kind of like I don't know what you do, right? Like you're kind of I feel like you're kind of screwed. Like maybe you try to like the entire like sovereign wealth fund goes towards acquiring DeepSeek or something, but other than that, I'm not sure like what exactly. I mean, even in India, I guess like I would just like really not try to like go like just do a bunch of different like random things and like really make concentrated bets on the most talented teams and like you have to make this happen sort of like NASA style, but I'm not sure exactly how you do that.
And I think that's where like kind of the regulation conversation is coming in, because to some extent you kind of have a disadvantage similar to potentially if you're in a large organization in a government position, right? Like there's all these regulations, checks and balances compared to the startups who are kind of like, hey, hit the ground running. We have a lot less responsibility, a lot less pressure on our shoulders. So let's just try to shoot for the stars. And, you know, if we miss compared to obviously some other folks. All right, trying to be cautious of time. So we always like to end our podcast with two questions. You kind of hit on the first question already, but curious if there's any other tools. We like to ask people what their personal tech stack is. So I'll let you answer that one and I'll rifle off the second.
That and then like Google Docs. A lot of using Claude for just like general research and tutoring and so forth. That's about it. It's you know, at the end of the day, it is a podcast, and so I'm not exactly cranking through the most advanced things. And then I don't know if you were about to mention.
I was going to say keep it easy and simple. I mean, to your point, why complicate things if they're working? The last question we like to ask our guests is, you know, one thing that you hope happens in 2025, and then one thing you do not, and we'll keep it very broad for you to kind of interpret and answer as you wish.
I hope happens in 2025. There's like a question I have for me personally, and then the answer I have for me personally, and an answer I have for I don't know the world. For me personally, it's just like LLMs get good enough that a lot of the post production stuff I do gets automated. That's probably not interesting to the rest of the world. I mean, for the rest of the world, just like a fully, maybe this is actually quite relevant to both. Fully automated software engineer would mean that all these like little scripts I write or whatever can just be like. Fundamentally, you know, we're getting to Cursor where you'd like do the vibe coding thing Andre Karpathy was talking about, like, but maybe it's just like that whole interface goes away and I'm just like, I want this kind of workflow for like getting from MP3 files to all the resources I need for, you know, like the Twitter clips and whatever, and all of that just is like totally abstracted away. And what I hope doesn't happen, I guess I would hate for this. Maybe like some like really unfortunate sort of political valence added to AI, where it gets really polarized in an unfortunate way, where either it just becomes like, I don't know. I mean, I'm somebody who like really believes in the potential for AI, and I'd be disappointed if like one major political faction is just like, yeah, we got to ban AI and it's evil or something. And I'd also be disappointed if then one major political faction is just like you know, we don't have to worry about. What's going to happen after the intelligence explosion, and like just like you're not taking that seriously. In fact, that's like you're actually like bad, because like you're not thinking about like AI ethics and like racism and whatever, because you're actually thinking about like the intel. Anyways, I could see where space in which the political situation might that's what I would hope wouldn't happen, is like the bigger picture thing gets ignored.
Yeah, and my very fast bonus question is, if you could wave the magic wand and have the models have like one new capability, and I think like maybe tangential to the automated AI software engineer, like is there anything like very specific that you want to have happen?
Better taste, and just like really, just being super opinionated and having better taste.
I like that. We might be able to get you that. So, Dwarkesh, this was a ton of fun. Thanks for shooting the shit with us and talking through stuff. I appreciate it.
Yeah. No, it was super fun. Thanks so much for making the time, guys.